Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I am your host, Carmen LaBurge, and indeed, today is the day. If you have not already ordered your Valentine's flowers, today is the day. If you have not already bought your Valentine card, today is the day. And you know, if you're a single person, I was single until I was in my early 40s, and so I recognize that Valentine's Day can be a little bit weird. For those of us in the culture who maybe you're not married, maybe you're not in a relationship of the kind that Valentine's Day seems to celebrate. You know what? We're the love people. We are the gospel people. We are Christians. The world is going to know us by our love. Just be absolutely unabashed and unashamed to live in the world as an agent of love and grace. Let other people know that they're loved by God this Valentine's Day. You're looking for a particular Valentine that is Christocentric, you can actually take John 3:16 and you can line it out in such a way that the word Valentine appears right down the middle of the verse. I know. Now I've given you like an arts and craft project for the day. You know how to cut out one of those paper hearts out of a piece of construction paper. You did it when you were a kid, so you can do it. Find a piece of construction paper, fold it in half. Maybe not construction paper. Use any kind of paper. Use the funny papers. It doesn't matter. Use an old piece of wrapping paper from Christmas that you haven't put away yet. Like this, there's all kinds of options. So cut out a heart. You know, you fold it in half and cut out half a heart and it makes a whole heart. Then use that seam that's down the middle and write the word Valentine, and then figure out, trust me, this works. You can take John 3:16 and you can write it out. You can write the verse out using those letters that are that create down the center of it the word Valentine. That is really what God is sending us at Valentine's Day, his very heart, the heart of Christ. And so it is Heart Month, and so we're going to talk today with Lisa Marone, who's a physical therapist, taking a look at heart health. But I thought that before she comes on, I would throw out some heart-related verses of Scripture to get us going. So, may the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be pleasing in your sight. O Lord, you are my rock and my redeemer. The one who has clean hands and a pure heart does not trust in idol or swear by false gods. We've, of course, got blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. That's Matthew 5:8. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. Psalm 34, verse 18. We invite God in Psalm 26, verse 2, to test me, O Lord, and try me. Examine my heart and my mind. Psalm 9, verse 1. I give thanks to the Lord with all my heart, and I tell of his wonderful deeds. I mean, on and on and on. There's actually lots of heart verses in the Bible. Let me see. Let me think about a couple of more. How about this one? How about from Jesus in John chapter 14? Peace I leave with you. My peace I give you. I don't give as the world gives, Jesus says. Do not let your hearts be troubled and do not be afraid. Psalm 37, verse 4. Take delight in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. The peace of God, which transcends all understanding, says the Apostle Paul in Philippians 4:7, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. All right. And then here's probably, like, if we're going to turn our attention to heart health and to the epidemic of heart failure in the United States, maybe here's the key verse for today. Psalm 73, verse 26. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. When I come back here on Mornings with Carmen, I'll be joined by Lisa Marone, who she and I are going to take a look together in this February Heart Month, look at heart health. We'll be right back.
When I wake up in the morning, love, and the sunlight hurts my eyes. There's never been a moment I was not here.
Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge. I am joined now by Lisa Marone. You can check her out at Lisa Marone www.lisatherapy.com. Lisa is a physical therapist, and she's joining us today in this month of February, which is Heart Month, to take a look at heart health. Lisa, welcome to Mornings with Carmen.
Carmen, it's so great to be with you today.
All right, so it's really fun. I know this is a personal issue for you. When we, when somebody says, hey, heart health is a personal issue for me, we find ourselves wanting to know why.
Yeah, you know, for myself, just the whole push for my ministry of getting healthy, for heaven's sake, began because my mother and my father really had very poor health. And this personal heart issue for myself began with my dad, who had a major heart attack at 54, and then a second life-ending one at 59. And so his dad before him had died of a heart attack at 39. And so this is something that is familial for me, and it was something that caused me great concern coming from that bloodline.
So it's familial for me as well. My dad had both his first and his last life-ending heart attack at 43. So talk with us about family history of cardiovascular disease and why that matters for us.
Yeah, it's really important because many of us feel like, okay, well, if I don't want to repeat my past history of my family, I'm just going to take good care of myself. I'm going to eat a heart-healthy diet, and I'm going to exercise and keep my weight down, as I was doing, Carmen. And I thought, there's something maybe that might still be in my body that I don't know about. And when I spoke to my physician about that, she said, you know, heart attacks that take place prior to the age of 60 are primarily genetic in origin. They're not from our lifestyle choices. And that really caught my attention, and I thought, huh, well, then I think I need to see a cardiologist because I just want to make sure there's nothing else that could possibly be done to protect me from going down the same path as my dad and my grandfather before him had.
And so what are some of the things that you learned? Because, you know, as you say here, Lisa, and again, friends, my conversation partner here on Mornings with Carmen is Lisa Marone. You can check out her ministry website at lisamarone.com. Lisa, what did you learn in that process? That there were things that were going on, you know, inside the human body that we don't necessarily have indications of. In, you know, you weren't short of breath. You weren't, I don't know, what are the things that we think of as indicators? Your arms weren't going numb.
We think maybe my heart race is out of control, or like you said, I become breathless doing normal activities, going up and down stairs, things like that. I didn't have any of those symptoms. And I started doing some research, and I came across a scientific article in the journal Circulation that said that 45% of heart attacks which occur are actually silent, meaning they're happening without any notable symptoms. And so there are small clogs that are happening in maybe less major arteries in the heart that are actually damaging our heart tissue and weakening them. 45% of our heart attacks are silent. So I said, all right, I'm going to a cardiologist, and I want to know. I want someone's eyes on this. And the cardiologist that I chose was, you know, in practice for 30 years, but more importantly to me as a professor, he was a professor at a medical school, a local medical school. And so I thought, this guy's going to be up on his stuff, and I want to hear from him. And so I went in, and he did all the regular things at first, you know, echocardiogram, looked at my blood pressure, looked at all my blood work that I brought in. And he said, yeah, you know, on paper you look great, but there's three things I want to do, and it's going to put this issue to bed for you, or it's going to cause us to do something further. And the first thing he did, Carmen, was he had a sonogram done of my carotid arteries. Your carotid arteries are in the front of your neck. They run up from your heart, and they're what's really feeding a lot of your brain. And so he was looking for any sign of plaquing that might be occurring in my carotid arteries. And those things happen. People oftentimes have blockages there that they don't know until they're almost fully blocked or they become clogged. The second thing, Carmen, he did was a transcranial sonogram, which was the same type of sonogram, but it was done through my cranium or my skull. And it was looking for the same thing of plaquing, but this time in the major blood vessels that was feeding my brain. And again, he was looking, I want to see, is there any genetic plaquing that's going on there? And then the last thing that was very interesting to me was I had this full panel of blood work done, and I knew that there was a component on the blood work called C-reactive protein. You may have heard of it. It's an inflammatory marker. And mine was always negative. But he said, there is a specific blood work I'm going to order, blood test, and it's called highly sensitive C-reactive protein. And he said, in studies, that was shown to be specific to inflammation within my blood vessels. So he said to me, Lisa, if I find any evidence of plaquing in either your head or in your neck, or the highly sensitive C-reactive protein is elevated, I'm going to put you on a statin, even though everything else about you looks perfect because of your genetic history. And I was so very thankful when he ran me through those batteries of tests that all of my things were clear. And he said, all right, now you have nothing to worry about. And so for those of you listening who have a history like mine, a family history, and there's always something niggling in the back of your head, you know, and you're taking good care of yourself, those are some three tests that it was the first time, Carmen, I breathed easy about that.
Friends, I'm going to continue my conversation with Lisa Marone about heart health right after a short break. You are listening to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Marone. She's a physical therapist. We're talking about heart health. February is Heart Month. And I'm just going to, Lisa, remind folks of these statistical realities here in the United States. About 610,000 people die of heart disease in the United States every year. That's one in every four deaths. Heart disease is the leading cause of death for both men and women. I of course, as soon as we say that, I say, okay, but abortion still outranks death by heart disease. But I feel compelled to insert that in when I'm reading these statistics. More than half of deaths due to heart disease in 2009 were men, but that just means that it's about half and half. Coronary heart disease is the most common type of heart disease, and it kills over 370,000 people every year in America. And every year, about, listen to this number, friends, 735,000 Americans have a heart attack. Of these, 525,000 are a first heart attack, and 210,000 happen in people who have already had a heart attack. So, Lisa, those are some of the statistics. I know that it only matters to us as individuals, right? But the numbers are pretty staggering. So we're talking about something that is really epidemic in terms of what's going on here in America. Those are the statistics. Before we went to break, you mentioned this the word statin, and we're talking there about a category of drugs. Tell us what statin drugs are, because if our cardiologist recommends them, or if our physician recommends them, we need to know what they are.
Statins are, quite simply, are medications that do two things that are extremely important in those who have plaquing. The first thing is that they prevent further plaquing in vessels, but they also reduce the plaque that is there. And so it's kind of like a rotor-rooter system on a chemical basis. And so there have been studies, when statins first came on the market, there was a little scare because people were saying, oh, I think it might be related down the line to Parkinson's disease or something like that. More and more studies have shown that that is not the case. And my cardiologist pulled out his drawer of box of statins, and he said, look, I take these every day. I've never had heart disease, but I have some plaquing. And I'm taking them because I feel like the risks are so minimal compared to me having a heart attack that I'm going to go with this. And so for most people, they're fine on statins. There's a few things of like any medication that they say, if you're on statins and you're feeling like severe aches or pains in your legs or arms that you're to contact your cardiologist, things like that. But these are very, very rare occurrences. And the benefits are far, far outweighing the possibility of you having a full-blown heart attack.
So when we talk about plaque, I will just admit to you, Lisa, that the first thing that comes to mind is my teeth. Tell us about the connection here with dentistry and what we should be thinking about.
Yeah, so while I was doing my own research to see is there something other that I could be doing, one thing I came across that was so unusual was the link between gum disease and heart disease. And specifically, there was the studies that were done originally were done with men, and they found that men who had gum disease, which the fancy word for that is periodontitis, that they had a 70% greater risk of developing heart disease when compared with men who did not have gum disease. And then if you don't have full-blown periodontitis, but you have a chronic case of gingivitis, which is gum irritation, you know, your gums might be a little red around the tooth line, puffy, they might bleed when you brush, that those men had a 40% increase in developing heart disease. And so Harvard Medical School researchers, they looked into this further, and what they were finding, fascinating, Carmen, is that the bacteria that is found in infected gum lines and the plaque, the specific plaque that does build up along our gum lines, that they were finding those inside the vessels of the heart, the coronary arteries. And so God is so amazing how the body is so interwoven. But if you want to protect your health, please hear me, protect the health of your teeth, because there is such a high correlation of heart disease to gum disease.
So this seems like a good opportunity to take a segue and have a conversation just about health in general and the way that the body is this interconnected system. Why do you do what you do? Why are you so passionate about health as it relates to faith?
Oh, Carmen, the whole point of us having a physical body is so that we can do the work of Christ that he has specifically ordained for each one of us to do. We have a personal and very specific ministry that he has, as scripture says, planned for us before even one of our days came to being. And so I'm passionate about this because I feel that in these times where we're certainly getting closer to Christ's return, that we need bodies that are strong and capable, and we need the longevity that we were originally designed to have in order to be his hands and feet, in order to reach the world with the gospel, in order to heal those who do come, to use our giftings. And so if we're in the, going from doctor's office to doctor's office, if we're dropping 10 years off of our longevity because of lifestyle choices, no one's going to step in and do your ordained work. And so I'm just passionate about people preserving their health for heaven's sake.
Friends, that's Lisa Marone. You can check out what she is writing about and invite her to come speak where you are at lisamarone.com. Lisa, thanks so much for joining us today.
Carmen, thank you for the opportunity.
Friends, I got to take a quick break here on Mornings with Carmen, but I'll be right back. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge, and I am going to be joined in just a moment by our weekly conversation partner, David Aikman. He is the editor of Godspeed Magazine, but many of you know him from his many decades serving as a journalist. He brings us not only wisdom, but wit and no small measure of charm to the conversation. So he and I are going to talk about the intersection of international politics and faith, and all of that's up next right here, Mornings with Carmen.
No relationship lasts very long without forgiveness, and this is never more true than at home. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. I believe that forgiveness is one of those things that isn't taught, it's caught. Your kids will only learn how to ask for and offer forgiveness if they see you model it. This is often hard for parents. It doesn't flow naturally. Parents don't want to admit their failures, but let me help you out here. No one is perfect. So the next time you step over the line or say something that hurts someone else, whether inside or outside the family relationship, ask for forgiveness. Saying two simple words, "I'm sorry," restores relationships and allows for a new beginning. When you model forgiveness, you prepare your kids for healthy relationships.
Want more help from Mark Gregston? Find books and other resources online at parentingtodaysteens.org.
James Bond.
Good morning, friends. You are listening to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge, joined by David Aikman, who has just that great Bond walk-up music. David, welcome back to Mornings with Carmen.
Thank you very much, Carmen. It's delightful to be on with you again.
Well, it's always delightful to talk with you. And as we approach, I don't know, the precipice related to Brexit, can we just start there? Tell us what progress has been made since we talked with you last week, and maybe what progress you hope to see in the coming days.
Well, Theresa May, the British Prime Minister, wanted to go to Brussels to ask them to alter parts of the deal that she originally agreed to with the EU. But all of the conversation coming back from Brussels has been yet nine impossible. So she's in a very difficult situation because the House of Commons, the British Parliament, both the Conservatives and the opposition Labour Party, refuses to accept the deal that she's done. Now, most of her problems actually come from her own party, because Conservative MPs who are in favour of Brexit really are very hard line in terms of whether they will accept any compromise between completely departing from the EU or having some kind of trade connection. So the big issue for those people, and also for the Northern Irish MPs who prop up the government, is the so-called Northern Ireland border backstop. The agreement was that Britain would remain, or at least Northern Ireland would remain, partly connected with the EU for a year to avoid the resumption of a hard border between the North and the Irish Republic. And nobody wants a hard border, neither the Irish nor the British nor anybody. So keeping that issue at bay is going to be very difficult.
And when we're talking about a hard border, we're talking about what most people would recognize as like border stops and border checks.
I'm sorry?
When we're talking about a hard border, help us understand that what that reality would be like. Right now, a person can pass freely across that border, and if there were the resumption of a hard border, then we'd be talking about border checks?
Oh, yes, very much so, and worse than that. You remember the so-called Troubles that were the violence between Irish Republican communities and pro-British communities in Northern Ireland and Londonderry and various other places. There was a hard border at that time. British customs posts, police stations, and so forth. And they were constantly the targets of IRA violence. And an awful lot of people were killed in the border area. And, of course, that spilled over to trouble between Protestant communities and Roman Catholic communities in Belfast itself. Nobody wants to go back to that kind of tension, because if you had a hard border, you would almost see an uptick in violence, mostly initiated by the Irish Republican Army.
So, David, I will admit to you, it is sometimes difficult for those of us in the United States of America, where we live with, you know, such a history, such a robust history of religious pluralism. And even though there may sometimes be, I don't know, rivalrous tensions between Roman Catholics and Protestants, no one here really imagines that that's a violent defense of a particular position. So I think that when you remind us of that, and when you help us understand there's a religious conversation,
yes,
that's a part of this conversation, I think that's interesting and helpful.
Well, the point of it was never really violence between two religious communities. What it was violence between Republican nationalist communities who were mostly Catholic and pro-British communities in North who were entirely Protestant. And so the big time of the Troubles was a relentless struggle between violent extremists on both sides. The Ulster Defence Constabulary had a wing of pro-violent activists, and of course the Irish Republican Army did. And so what you have in Northern Ireland and the Irish border is an absolute resolute campaign by the Irish Republican Army, supported by Sinn Féin, the political branch that is active in Northern Ireland, to basically restore Northern Ireland to the Irish Republic. Well, I shouldn't say restore, because it was never part of the Irish Republic. But there is currently, under the terms of the 1998 peace treaty, guaranteeing freedom at the border, there is the freedom of anybody living in Northern Ireland, if he or she wants to become an Irish Republican citizen. And in theory, anybody from the north could move south. And in theory, anybody from the south could move north. But what the Irish nationalists in the north want to do is to push Northern Ireland basically to abandoning its connection with the United Kingdom. And that is something the Northern Irish Protestants are adamant against accepting. And British members of Parliament don't want to go along with either.
So that's just fascinating. And I think that when we talk about violent extremism and when we think about it having any connection whatsoever to a particular religious faith or expression, even if it's nationalistic in its form, we don't tend to think about Protestants and Catholics. We don't tend to think about Christians. We here in the United States tend to think about radical extremism or violent extremism in relationship to, let's say, ISIS or let's say the Taliban. And yet, we are having U.S. negotiations with the Taliban. Can you take us there?
Yes. Well, it's a very interesting negotiation because it started in Afghanistan, basically between representatives of the U.S. government through the U.S. military stationed there and representatives of the Taliban, who, of course, have been fighting the United States and the Afghan government for years. And what these two sides have agreed to do is to have conversations whereby the ultimate goal for the Taliban would be the complete departure of any American and coalition forces from Afghanistan altogether. And what the claim or what the desire of the United States representatives is, in return for a commitment to do that, will the Taliban keep in place the various freedoms for Afghan citizens, especially including women and schooling for young Afghan women? Will they keep that in place? And that's the real dilemma. So far, there seems to have been some progress, but the oddball in the soup is the fact that Pakistan was not included in the negotiations that took place recently in Moscow. And if Pakistan doesn't go along with the agreement, it's probably not workable.
Well, you and I might have to return to that subject at a later date. Let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, can we talk about the U.S. summit with North Korea?
Yes.
Okay, friends, you are listening to Mornings with Carmen. My conversation partner is David Aikman, and he and I will be right back. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge. My conversation partner is David Aikman. He's a best-selling author and journalist and foreign policy consultant and excellent Monday morning conversation partner. So, David, as we recognize that God is concerned not only about the affairs of the heart, but he's concerned about foreign affairs, take us to the Korean Peninsula and give us a little forecast about this summit that is planned between the United States and North Korea.
Well, the summit, of course, is a follow-on to the initial summit between Kim and President Trump in Singapore last year. And the idea is that this will hopefully build up momentum to speed up the denuclearization process of North Korea. Whether it will do so or not, I don't know. But there are many problems here. First of all, having a nuclear weapon is the trump card of North Korea's entire position in Asia and the world. And if you take that trump card away, sorry to use that pun, I suppose it's intentional, then North Korea doesn't have any protection against significant military and economic pressure that might be exerted against it, either by the United States or other Western countries or both, or even China. So North Korea is not going to abandon its trump card. On the other hand, the United States is eager to remove some of this, well, I wouldn't say it's eager, but it's willing to remove some of the economic sanctions that have so constricted North Korea's development and have been in place for a number of years, because North Korea has been unwilling to give up its nuclear weapons. And it's embarked on testing nuclear weapons, testing ballistic missiles and so forth, which is a real stumbling block. And one of the intermediate goals is to have a peace agreement between North Korea and the United States to end the Korean War. As you know, the Korean War was never ended in any kind of peace treaty, but simply in an armistice between North and South. And the North considers itself technically at war with the South. And as you know, over recent years, there have been several terrorist attacks by the North on the South, and indeed on neutral countries too. So trying to get this changed is one important thing. The other thing that I think is more important in a way is trying to get some kind of humanitarian foot in the door in North Korean society. I mean, if people can be sentenced to death for watching South Korean television from North Korea, something pretty bleak is going on in that society. We all know it's a completely regimented, totalitarian, militaristic state, totally intolerant of any views that are even slightly critical of its own regime. And changing that paradigm has to be part of the goal of American policy, ultimately.
Well, and I think that for Americans, you know, when we just think of it, it just hasn't been that long ago in our collective experience that a student, you know, from here in the United States of America, Otto Warmbier, was accused of something in North Korea for which he was arrested and incarcerated, and he came home dead. And so I think that there's a part of this that there's just this disconnect for us where we're trying to imagine that we're negotiating with what we have been told now for generations is not just a dictatorship, but really a horrific regime.
Yes. I mean, most Americans are incapable of imagining what life is like in a totally totalitarian, repressive dictatorship. In fact, I've always suggested, with tongue-in-cheek, that every Democratic and, indeed, Republican candidate for Congress ought to be forced to live in a socialist country of his choice for 2 weeks, because that would really bring reality home to people who naively assume that everybody in the world thinks like Americans. Unfortunately, they don't.
Well, that's a nice segue to a conversation about Venezuela. We don't have a lot of time to talk about it, but can you bring us an update on what's happening in our socialist southern neighbor?
Yeah, the People's Happy Republic of Venezuela. Yes, well, it's very unfortunate because the Americans have provided a convoy of food supplies through Colombia, and it's stuck on the Venezuelan border. And the Venezuelan government has refused to allow it in, and in fact has assembled blockages on the main freeway into the country of Venezuela itself, because they think this is just an imperialist plot to undermine the regime. Well, it's certainly a plot to bring food to the Venezuelans. And if Venezuelans are grateful to the United States for providing sustenance for them that they cannot obtain in their own country, so be it. And the issue is whether anybody in the Venezuelan military that supports Maduro, because he ensures that they get paid first before anybody else, and there's a fair amount of corruption going on, will any of these leading military commanders in the military, will they defect to support the opposition candidate who has proclaimed himself the president, Juan Guaido? So we don't know whether there's going to be any defections from the military supporting Maduro, but that really has to happen before we can see any positive change in Venezuela.
David Aikman, thank you, as always, for bringing us your perspective on what's happening around the globe. We appreciate your being with us here today on Mornings with Carmen.
Thank you so much, Carmen.
I got to take one more quick break, and when we come back, we'll be wrapping it up. Don't go away. I'm Carmen LaBerge. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I am your host, Carmen LaBerge. I would like to round out our time together this morning by sharing with you something that's going to happen in an hour and a half from right now, right here on My Faith Radio. Focus on the Family is on every single day. And today, Jim Daly is going to be sharing what I think is actually the most significant effort of Focus on the Family in the history of the pro-life effort, to actually bring us together as a people on point, like that we would actually, as pro-life Americans, get on the same page together and work together to do what they're calling See Life Clearly. So that's what he's going to be talking about today. He's going to invite you to visit FocusOnTheFamily.com and check out the See Life Clearly effort. There is a declaration for life that if you have not signed with millions of others, I'd encourage you to do so. He's also going to talk about their May 4 event in New York City, and he's going to invite you to join him there in Times Square for the Alive from New York event on May the 4th. So there's lots of opportunities. I'm sure the list is longer than that. Those are the things that I remember off the top of my head from hearing Jim talk about this on an earlier occasion. And I just want to encourage you, if you're looking for a way to engage, if you like me and what many others were just sort of horrified by the action taken in the state of New York in relationship to unborn lives, this is an opportunity to actually do something in response and engage. And so let me encourage you to do that. Friends, we have started off another great week here on Mornings with Carmen. I invite you to check out the podcast at myfaithradio.com. You can always hit me up on Twitter. I'm at Carmen LaBerge, or email me, carmen@myfaithradio.com. Have a great day. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBerge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.